I get the sense that there's too much emphasis. People say development, and then they say development is everything. And I'm not saying this is everywhere. This has just been my experience. And then when you speak with testers, oh yeah, we get the testing. And my point being back is that, well, as far as I'm concerned, for most organizations, unless you go through testing and config, you'll never get to production. So it doesn't matter how much development and how much effort goes there, unless you're thinking of the whole pie. But what people are quoting from the books and from the literature, it's like, oh yeah, we're going to do this. It doesn't seem to, the whole oversight concept about, all right, I'm not saying you need to be flexible, but it's like, the way it's been interpreted from the areas I've been involved with, it's flexible around development, and then testing says, you have to do your testing. And there's no
or we're so good at doing the development, you don't need any testing.
Or they do story points, but story points are only for development, but what about testing? So you can develop all you want, but unless you have something that's a quality outcome at the end of it, aren't you just going back to waterfall? Like, with the customer's not getting what they want at the very start? How, in those forms, you know, people with a lot of experience, how do you combat, from a testing point of view, how do you influence them to around to see that there's a wider picture than just development here? The testers sit beside the developers, but when estimates come up, it was like, well, we'll just go with the development estimates, not with the testing estimates.
Yep. So you need to have input there.
And I say, well, you know, you've got 5 developers, you've got 1 tester.
Yeah.
But that's not gonna work.
So I don't think the estimates matter so much.
Yeah.
As long as what you need to convince them is that you cannot count the points until it's accepted. And accepted means it's been developed, it's been tested, and someone from business has seen it and said, I'm ready to go.
Yeah. And the other thing is, where do you define your testing? Because a lot of places will say, oh, no, you can only test up until, you know, we actually release the deliverable. Like, you can only get involved in unit testing and integration testing. You don't actually get system testing time.
Yeah. But that was one of the things, and it was like, oh, well, Agile says this, Agile says that, and I'm saying, I don't care what Agile says. Experience has said to me that you need to do this activity, you need to check that activity matches the desired outcome, and if it doesn't, you need to manage that process. You can't just say, I'm doing this, and counting that as progress. And it's just my experience with it so far. And the interesting I found was that but it was got instructed to these areas, two areas, the beginning of being one and being the other, and then we were adopting from both of those methodologies. And that thing about development and estimates for development all and the segregation was quite strongly embedded in those teams. And that might be just where I used to work thing, but do you see that much in the industry, like what industry? Or
I just see it working in very few places, I think. The only time I've seen it work is, and the tricky thing is, how do you get everyone to have a shared vision of what problem the team is trying to solve? I think where you've got that, and people have had a history of working together, and then they all sort of start talking to each other and say, oh, this is what sucks about our process, and this is how some of the principles from different approaches might help us. That, you know, well, then it can sort of work. Most places are not doing that. Someone's either rolling it down, you know, mandating it from above and saying you're going to do it, or someone else is coming from their own context and trying to, you know, just blanket apply it to yours. And if they're looking at the XP book, then my view of XP is that, and I've ranted about this on the blog, I think, as well, you know, that book is a snapshot of this group of people solving a problem at one particular point in time. So you've got a bunch of smart developers, you know, with some testing skills and some analytical skills, working around the fact that no one else in that company that was working with them seemed to have those skills. And so they figured out an approach to deliver something that was, you know, helpful to their customers. Now, the moment you sort of roll testers into it, you're not doing XP, you're doing something else. And there are fundamental problems with trying to sort of have this linear process approach where you're saying, okay, I'm going to develop the feature and the test is going to test it. You're immediately bringing all this noise and dependencies into your process. You're running multiple parallel waterfalls, essentially. And the best you can hope for is that your testers are pretty much idle half the time. You know, at worst, all your testing tasks take longer than your development tasks. And the moment the developers are done, because they don't seek your feedback beforehand, and you know, the team focus should really be on how do we give ourselves as good a shot as possible of just delivering something at the end of this iteration that works and that we can put into production. You know, and that's a challenge for us as a team. How are we going to get that done? And if they're only looking at the testers as people who are going to come and do something after the developers think they're done, then it's always going to suck, because there's just too much variability in the testing task, and they're going to sit around and go, oh, the testers are not done.
Yeah, but it's in agile terms, what you've got to do is you've got to extend one part of XP, and Kristen and I've had this conversation, that there's the idea that you've got done, it's been built, done, it's been sort of unit and integration tested, and that's typically the end of the model. And you need like a third version of done that says, okay, it might work on this particular browser, but until we've tested it on the whole range of browsers, you know, I don't care what you say, you're not done. You know, there's this testing level of done to go. And the best way to talk to a lot of these people is on their terms. You know, so you can say, okay, you've got this concept of done, okay? That makes sense from a developer point of view. Okay, but a deliverable to a customer, you really need an extra done in there, which is all the testing you've done. You know, and I think you had this nightmare situation where, you know, you get red light, you know, green light at the end of the done. Yeah, wow, all the developer tests run fantastic. Hang on, we can't run this on this other browser that we have to deliver to the customer. Well, I'm sorry, you know, we're done. And you aren't.
One of the things, the agile in this organization has almost become law from the way it was set up.
Yeah.
And key people are developing it. So there's a lot that I liked about it. I liked stories, how people were going to approach it. And we were definitely a lot more engaged with the developers than a traditional waterfall project and had a lot more things. But what I didn't like was at that point, it was like, you're done. It's like, well, no, once we get to here, we're not, I believe we're not done. And that includes what the business is. Because you don't deliver what the business wants. You might as well come to work.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of the problem with people going, so agile says this. Well, agile is agility, and the team's supposed to be agile and not rigid. And people come in and go, oh, no, you've got to do this. You've got to do this. It says this. Yeah. Like, no, it doesn't say that. It says that you find the best solution for the team to solve the problem.
Well, it doesn't say that.
It probably doesn't say it, because maybe that's why.
You know, you might wrap that over the top of it. But,
yeah.
But, you know, the subtext of it is, we think these, you know, these things on the right are problematic, and then we're going to do this stuff on the left to overcome that. So if that's not your problem, the stuff on the right, then maybe you shouldn't be doing it. But and also lots of things that you used to do go missing. People pick and choose stuff and then don't compensate in other ways.
Yeah. I think I've got a good example of that one where at one of the previous companies I worked at, we started doing agile, I think it was XP we were doing. And we used to do design reviews, code reviews, like we used to do in waterfall. So we stopped doing code reviews and they weren't pairing. And I said to him, well, you don't do code reviews because we're doing agile. Okay, so you're going to do pairing. No, we're not doing pairing. Well, you're not covering the risk anymore. Right? And that happens a lot. People go, oh, we don't need documentation. Okay, so how are you going to replace that documentation? Oh, we're not. So, you know, like this. Okay, so you do pairing to cover off the design. No, we're not. Well, then you're just leaving a risk.
Yeah, mostly, I think it's the big picture stuff. Like in the past, you know, you had a big lump of a document, and it's not without ambiguity, but someone's put a bit of thought into it and tried to figure out what the product should do and what the finished thing's going to look like. And I see most agile teams doing really badly on just replacing that with anything. And so they just sort of start laying into features. And then it's like, okay, what does this really need to do? And how are we going to know when we've satisfied that customer need and their goals to some degree? And they just keep working on at this micro level, and then the tester is suddenly, you know, looking macro and saying, well, this doesn't help anyone. Like, given the customer's problem statement, we're not satisfying that. And they track it at the end, and they do unimportant features at the beginning, and they build their scaffolding and stuff that doesn't actually deliver any business value. And then they're claiming points and saying, we're progressing. It's like, we need to be able to do this. Can we do that today? No, okay, not done. What do we need to do? How do we get there to some degree as quickly as humanly possible?
To do that, though, you need the support of a business person.
Yeah, well,
because generally they won't listen to a tester saying that. But if you've got some business people in the room who support you and say, we need to get there, and just go, why? Oh, I don't believe you, but then the business person backs you up, then eventually you get that.
Yeah. Well, I guess the business engagement here was not optimal. Like,
yeah.
I would, like, from what I've, like, stories I've heard from Jared and other folk about Agile, quite, it was all very statistical, and they had a lot of domain knowledge that was not easily acquired.
Yeah.
But we brought people in, and the episode of the week, what the business said, that technology knew what the impact of Agile was, but they felt that the business didn't know what the impact of Agile was. They did not understand how intensive of the use of their time it is.
And it's huge. Like, they've got the hardest role. Typically, you don't give them any training or preparation. You say, I need to be around here all the time. Well, typically, you know, there's already a value which says, my time's precious and don't waste it. And, you know, I'll just tell you what I want and you go away and do it. And then I'll come and look in at the end and tell you that I don't like it and be unhappy with what was delivered. You know, that's the traditional model, I suppose.
Yeah.
I'm too busy to be involved, but I reserve the right to bitch about the outcome.
Yeah.
And then you're saying, now be involved. And there's a massive time commitment, and you can't just suddenly tell them to do that because they've still got all these other things they need to be doing. Yeah. And so the business hasn't prepared for that. You're not going to get there.
Are you on Agile testing? The Yahoo?
No.
Because there was a similar issue to what you were saying, I think it was posted a couple of days ago, and it was basically this person saying, hey, I'm new to Agile. You know, what gives with this concept of I raise a bug, but it's not a bug, it's just a feature for, you know, a later iteration?
Yeah, and I got that as well, saying, well, that becomes a story point for later on.
And you think, well, you know.
Someone saying, well, this is feedback.
Mm.
If you choose to do that with a feedback, that's fine, but you just, there's a stack of stories. And stuff.
But see, the problem there is, you know, there seems to be this implicit thing that velocity at all costs.
Yeah.
You know, and as soon as you get bug fixes, you're draining velocity.
But is it velocity?
Well,
it shouldn't be. You don't get faster with Agile.
But if you get...
You get predictability.
Yeah.
You get control that you can...
Sustainability.
What's that?
Sustainability.
Yeah, so, you know, so we should be saying, okay, we're gonna take a bit more care to keep the code base clean, to focus on delivering the important stuff. But we're not going to get more for less. That just doesn't happen. Except to the degree that your requirements processes might be bloated and fat. You can trim a lot there of the upfront work, but you don't get more software done.
The key to it seems to be, and the smart people doing Agile are doing this, and the people who don't understand it properly aren't, is to have enough slack in each iteration to deal with the majority of the bugs. Okay? Because then that problem goes away. You know, it's got to be a story in a later iteration. Well, no, we can just fit it in this current iteration.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is a lot of places, the way they do Agile, they just fill up the bucket as much as they can.
Yeah.
And there's no slack. So as soon as anything pops up, they just cannot do it in that iteration.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think there's two separate problems there. One is that we don't plan to be done, like really done.
Yeah.
And we know that if we had to put it in production, you know, the customer would be really happy with it. So we've had them use it. We've had, you know, the right people in from different parts of the business to assess that this thing is going to work for them. That's one thing. But then there's the upfront work that you got to do to make sure that you are actually building the right thing for that iteration as well. And so the planning is often poorly focused or just skipped over as unimportant. You know, we're just loading up features instead of helping the team develop a shared vision of what needs to be done for that week and what that, you know, done to the customer's satisfaction means. You need to, I think, spend a bit of time up front.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we used to spend probably easily 20% or more of time in requirements, and people suddenly think you don't have to do that because it's an Agile project. And it's like, well, no, you still need to spend that time figuring out what it is you're really going to do.
I find it interesting that people speak about Agile, and I get shivers down my spine, and people keep up saying, oh, we don't have to do this, rather than speak about what they have to do, or what they should be doing, or what's increasing.
Mm.
Like, lots of that V model and waterfall and iterative and all the rest of it is lessons learned, and that's why people put in plans and reports and statuses. And in Agile, I understand that it's a smaller focus and you're delivering in some instances. I think, first off, I don't think what we were developing was appropriate. Agile was the right methodology to use. It was a batch-based system, so everything went A, B, C, D, E, F, G. There was a couple of you know, web interfaces, but like that was about 5% of the work. And everybody in the team, there's only 1.5 people who actually had Agile experience in previous areas and not within the company we were working in. So I don't think it was the best choice of methodology.
Yeah.
And the methodology was chosen before the business case was even completed.
Mm.
I think the business case should have been completed first, and then you say, well, the best way to do this methodology would be but then you're left working in the real world.
Because you almost need, you know, you need to move architectural sort of input into some of it often to say, well, this is how we can deliver it incrementally as well, instead of, you know, the traditional thing, well, I've got this money, I have to spend it, so I'm going to throw everything into this project. Then you're just stuffed as well, because one of the advantages it should be giving you is the ability to say, well, we don't need to do all this now.
I would recommend it again if I saw the circumstances, didn't saw the benefits to it.
Yeah.
How often did you have stabilisation builds, if ever?
It was non-planned. I asked about that. I said I wanted to wipe the environment clean and build it from scratch.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, well, we'll talk about that later on down the piece.
Yeah.
And they had planned for 10 iterations, which the last two iterations have been contingency. But after the first iteration, we had already eaten up the last two. Yeah. And the project manager was saying, no, we're going to fit this into 10 iterations. Yeah. And I was saying, well, your capacity says otherwise. You know.
That's the problem, you get the reality interfering.
Oh, the velocity will get better.
And the thing about it is, like, my point was, that's fine, but I would rather prepare for the worst case, and if your velocity does get better, well, then you're going to be delivering earlier, rather than you have to push it out.
Yeah, yeah. That's another big rant, is that most teams are sort of going through their stories, expressing estimates as a single point, single figure.
Yeah.
They're not then taking into account any complexity related to combining those single figures, because, you know, the 2 + 2 does not equal 4 when it comes to those features.
Yeah.
They're not banding estimates, they're not then planning for uncertainty and saying, well, if we can only get this much done, what should it be? And if we can get this much done, what should it be? What makes sense as a coherent release? And tell them, well, we can plan for this and we can plan for that and some other middle case, such that we do deliver something useful, even if we only can get through this much.